Over the past 3 years, a myriad of terms for the reality of war have emerged in Israeli discourse. A commanded war, Milchemet Mitzvah, an existential war, Milchemet Kiyum, a war of restoration, Milchemet Komemiyut, an optional war, Milchemet Reshut, and more. At the core of each concept lies a different mode of conduct and a different motive, and they express a stance on the place war occupies in society as a whole and in relation to other social duties and needs in particular. Parashat Pinchas provides an opening for these distinctions as the verses describing the selection of Yehoshua as leader in this parasha form the foundation for the halachic, social, and political procedures required to embark on an optional war. Thus, the parasha serves as fertile ground for questions regarding the definition of war, the circumstances that characterize it, and how an individual should navigate their diverse duties and commitments during a time of war. Our parasha describes the moment Yehoshua is chosen as leader. God said to Moshe, the verses tell us, "Take Yehoshua the son of Nun." The manner in which Yehoshua is expected to conduct himself is also described. "And he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before the Lord. At his word they shall go out, and at his word they shall come in, he and all the Israelites with him, even the whole congregation." This verse serves as the anchor for how the decision to go out to an optional war is made, as described in the first chapter of Sanhedrin. "And they do not lead the nation out to an optional war except by the authority of a council of 71 members. There's an obligation, the Mishnah tells us, upon society, upon the king perhaps, in modern terms, upon the executive branch, to turn to the Supreme Assembly of Leaders, the modern judiciary, in order to embark on an optional war. The Talmudic discussion explains this procedure is based on the verses concerning Yehoshua. Rabbi Abbahu said, as the verses state, "And he shall stand before Eleazar the priest." Thus, the authority of the single leader diminishes. Additional stages are introduced that heighten caution and perhaps even serve as checks against embarking on an optional war. But the discussion raises a more fundamental question. What is an optional war? What is an obligatory war? And what are their characteristics? In Masechet Sotah, there is a statement by Rava that provides an example for each type of war. Rava said, "Yehoshua's war for conquest are, by all accounts, obligatory." From this example, one can try to generalize and deduce what an obligatory war is. Yet questions also arise from it. Is this referring to a single historical point in time and nothing more, the era of Yehoshua? Or is it about the conquest of the land in general, at any time? Or perhaps Yehoshua's wars serve as a paradigm for any struggle for Jewish life, even outside the land of Israel. And we must ask, what does conquest mean? A place where Jews can live? A place where Jews are rulers? What does conquest signify regarding the place and status of non-Jews? Rava continues, "The wars of the house of David for expansion, by all accounts, optional." Once again, we can try to generalize and deduce what constitutes an optional war. And once again, many questions arise. Is this referring to a specific historical point in time, the era of the House of David? Or is it that what marks a war optional, according to Rava, is the characteristic of expansion, and the mention of David's era is merely an example? and the expansion of territory for the sake of release from distress or for the sake of a more comfortable life, economic prosperity, or perhaps the intention is specifically a physical expansion. The Talmudic discussion also presents a case where it is uncertain whether it is an optional war or an obligatory one. This case also relates to the dispute between Rabbi Yehuda and the sages in the Mishnah preceding the discussion. Where they, Rabbi Yehuda and the sages, tells us the Talmud, disagree is regarding a war to diminish the non-Jews so that they do not come against them. One master, Rabbi Yehuda, calls it a mitzvah, and one master, the sages, call it optional. What comes up is that attempting to formulate a precise definition reveals significant gray areas. The Talmudic discussion notes that a situation where we diminish the Gentiles so that they do not attack, meaning a defensive war aimed at neutralizing a threat, falls into a gray zone. Surprisingly, the status of a war waged to ensure that enemies do not attack is never cleanly categorized. This debate in Masechet Sotah is complicated further by the passage in Masechet Sanhedrin mentioned earlier, which relies on verses from our parasha to map out the protocols for an optional war. Yehoshua is the quintessential symbol of commanded wars, the leader most deeply identified with them. Yet the text uses verses about Yehoshua as the legal foundation for launching an optional war. Why would the tradition derive the proper procedure for an optional war from a leader whose defining mission was entirely obligatory? The result is the blurring of the boundaries between these two categories of conflict. One consequence is that the existential urgency of an obligatory war might bleed into the framework of an optional one. Conversely, the extreme caution required for an optional war might bleed into how we approach an obligatory threat. This ambiguity deepens when we realize just how vast the space is between obligatory and optional wars, a reality perfectly exemplified by the unresolved debate over wars waged so they do not attack. War is an extreme and terrible reality for all. By its very nature, it feels stark and definitive. Yet, as we have seen, trying to define and characterize different types of war raises profound questions. The chief discussion in Tractate Sotah raises a further question about the practical implications of war. Different types of conflict produce entirely different priorities. Consequently, our sages clash over the status of other duties and commitments, those outside the battlefield, during a time of war. As the Talmud frames it, the practical difference relates to one who is engaged in a mitzvah being exempt from other mitzvot. Osek b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. The Gemara explains that this distinction is crucial because in some wars, active involvement takes absolute precedence over all other civic and religious obligations, and by contrast, others force us to confront a difficult question. Should we abandon our other responsibilities, or must they still be maintained? Obligatory wars demand total alignment behind a single leader, and perhaps this halachic category ceased to exist after the era of Yehoshua. Optional wars require a delicate balance of political, religious, and judicial accountability, and perhaps this category too has been obsolete since the days of King David. But perhaps the true purpose of these halachic categories and the vast gray area between them is to force us to constantly ask, how did we decide to go to battle? What are we fighting for and toward what end? which institutions are guiding the decision and overseeing the conflict? And finally, what does this reality mean for the ongoing duties and moral commitments of every individual within a society at war? Shabbat shalom.